Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to the show. I have Bridget Sampson. She is the CEO of Sampson Communication Consulting. Thanks for stopping by today.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So if you could give us an overview of your entrepreneurial journey and a little bit about your business.
Sure. Well, my company is called Sampson Communication Consulting, and we help organizations by designing and facilitating training programs, professional development programs on almost any topic that you can imagine. So my journey has involved a little bit of an academic side where I got my education in communication studies. I've been teaching at a university, and I also got some experience very early on as a consultant working for a consulting company. So I loved it. That was over 20 years ago. I got to travel the world helping people improve their communication skills, and at that point decided I wanted to do it on my own and started my own consulting business.
I think the consulting business model is so interesting because a lot of times there's so many arms of the business where I know that you wrote a book and you've given a TED Talk and you've done several different things. So maybe dive into the various facets of what you do.
Okay, great. Well, yes, there are many different facets. So one facet is being a trainer and being in the training room, for instance, at Google training. Last week, it was 100 managers at Google doing a professional development program for them. It's also one-on-one executive coaching. So really intensely working with one person to improve their communication, their leadership, their management, their team building skills. So it's coaching, training. And then I, of course, I try to do as much writing as I can, trying to get into blogging and getting the message out there of what we teach and what we provide in various formats. So writing the TED Talk was a great opportunity. One of my passions is helping people overcome their fear of public speaking. So when I found out that I would have the opportunity to deliver a TEDx talk, I thought I really want to put the message out there about how important it is for us to be confident public speakers. So that was a great opportunity. And so I'm just open to any opportunities that come my way to help people grow and develop and especially improve their communication skills.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to ask you, since that is such a big fear, what do you think is the key to overcoming public speaking fear? I'm sure it's hard to summarize into one thing, but can you kind of nail it down to one thing?
Sure. To me, it's just understanding that all you need to do is be yourself. I think people think they need to put on an act or a show or have some life-changing advice to give. I think everyone has a story. Everyone has something important to share. And if people just realize all I need to do is be myself and say whatever it is that I have to say that's unique for me, I'll be fine. I'll be great.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be the perfect version of yourself. Right. It can be the relatable version that has many facets to it.
Exactly. That's why I love TED Talks so much, because you can watch any TED Talk and you'll see that. You'll see people being vulnerable and genuine and making mistakes and talking about the life lessons that, you know, that they've learned and experienced. And it's not perfect. It's just genuine. It's authentic.
Yeah. So what does being an entrepreneur mean to you?
To me, it means that I have complete control over the work that I take on, the way the work is done. Most of the time, the number of hours that I work, although I can get a little out of control at times, but I have complete control over the work, the way time is spent, the way our business is marketed, the message that we send, and the quality of the products that we offer. I really like having that control.
Yeah, I bet, especially compared to working for someone else where a lot of times you don't. And that's where a lot of our entrepreneurs watching and listening are at right now. They're in a job and they're thinking about making that change. Mm-hmm. And that change is difficult. Fear sets in. What are the steps that I should take before I make the leap? So if you could take us back to that time when you first embarked on the entrepreneurial journey, what was that transition like?
Yeah, for me, it was really important to have a clear business plan and to decide this is what I want to do. This is the direction that I want to go. People ask about consulting all the time and have so many different ideas about what consulting is. So I think it's really important to decide very clearly, this is the product or service, or these are the products and services that I want to be offering, that I am proud of, I'm passionate about, that are exciting to me. And then really learning a lot, finding mentors and asking a lot of questions, reading, learning about how you can go into that business and who's done it before. It's never reinventing the wheel. Well, rarely, right? So learning from people who have taken that path before and being really clear on which way you plan to go. I think that's the start.
Sure. So the fear of failure and self-doubt, all those things are very real. So yes. Do you still struggle with that sometime? Did you more so in the beginning? And if so, how have you dealt with it?
I still struggle with it all the time. And I dealt with it a lot in the beginning. And I think it's easier after you have experience, since I've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
You realize it's all going to be okay. There are slow times. There are times when there's too much and you can't get everything covered. So it's just reminding yourself that if you stay the path and you keep following your plan, and do the things you know that you need to do and that others have done to be successful, staying calm. I'm a big yoga fan.
You got to breathe through it.
Yes. You have to have practices that allow you to center yourself and realize everything's going to be okay. It's all going to work out.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you could go back in time to those beginning years where it was a little harder to manage, what advice would you give your early entrepreneurial self?
I would say to be more aggressive. I thought about saying the word assertive, but really I had opportunities that I missed to tell people about what I do, to explain to people the value of what I do. And I didn't take those opportunities, whether they were friends or family members, people who were connected and could have used my services and could have greatly benefited from what I do. But I never wanted to be pushy and I didn't want to appear aggressive. And I realize now, because now I'm much more confident about doing that and I've made great connections where I'm able to help people in ways that they need help. So I would say be assertive. Talk about what you do, not to the point where you're being pushy or you're putting people off.
Pleasantly persistent.
Exactly. Yeah. Pleasantly persistent. And if you have something of value to offer, why not let people know about it and take every opportunity to share it?
Yeah, that's a tough one and a really good point. And I so can relate to it. I think a lot of times in the beginning, you struggle with imposter syndrome, just being a new entrepreneur and, oh, am I really qualified to tell these people what I'm doing? But if you look at it like, hey, I have a way that I can add value to someone, you're just sharing that you have this offering and you're not pushing it on them. And I think there's definitely a correct way of doing it.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you think is the best and the worst part about working for yourself?
The best part is having control and being able to do what you want to do and to pick and choose. I've said no to things that I really didn't want to do that I probably wouldn't have been able to say no to if I worked for someone else. And I think the challenging part is work-life balance. For me, having a family and wanting to do fun things and have my own time and have time to breathe. So for me, when you're an entrepreneur and you have your own business, for me, it's been challenging to find the balance because I never stop working. I have an office at home and I can always work. I can always go in there and work. Yeah. So finding that balance is challenging, but I think I'm figuring it out.
Is there something that you found that's helped you find that balance?
For me, really, it is yoga and doing a lot of reading. I like spiritual reading and reading that just helps me get my mind out of the work I need to think about, and also just spending time with friends. I have a lot of amazing friends, so just getting out to lunch or dinner with friends.
So really making time for the other things that are important to you, not just your career.
Exactly. Because I could work 24/7. There would be work there. I'm sure everyone feels the same way. So I could, if I don't stop and force myself to get out, and especially something like yoga, I go to a yoga class typically that's at 5:30 at night. So I have to stop working, you know, at 4:30 to get there on those days. And I always have that conflict of, no, I should do one more thing, or I should answer this important email from a client. I have to say, yoga is more important. My work-life balance and my self-care is more important. I'm going to set it aside and come back to it tomorrow. Or maybe at 10 o'clock tonight if it really can't wait.
Sure. So obviously you've built a successful business. You've helped others build their successful business. What are three tools that every entrepreneur has to have? It could be tangible, like an app or software. It could be intangible related to communication, your expertise. So what would you say those three things are?
Well, I think the website is really important. I'm actually rebranding myself and redoing my website. So I think having a really great, engaging website that helps people understand what you do and the value you offer and has fantastic testimonials from your clients and that you're blogging so people know what you have to offer. I think the website's really important. I think that having, for me, it may not be related to the business, but having some kind of practice aside from the business like yoga or something that's completely separate from the business that allows you to detach from it when it's too much. So something that works for people personally, for self-care and for balance. So the third thing I would say is having a really strong network of colleagues who do what you do or are in your field. So people who you can talk to when you're not sure about how to make a decision or what direction to go with your business. Definitely having a strong network and constantly growing that network of folks who get what you do.
All really great advice. Or let me start that over. All very good tips. Thank you so much. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about building the business. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
People think that you or I or anybody successful in business, we have this secret that we're holding back from everybody. And then the con artists out there in the world say, go mortgage a house, give me $100,000. I'm going to make this all
the secret
perfect.
Is talent.
The secret is talent and hustle.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars. I'm continuing my conversation with the CEO of Samsung Communication Consulting. So where did you get the idea to start this consulting business?
I actually worked for a consulting company for 1 year. So I really learned the ropes there, got to travel, got to learn about how you develop training programs and how you engage in executive coaching and how you work with clients and build relationship with clients. So I spent a year really learning the business and then went out to do it on my own.
So when you started your business, you were teaching at the time, which allowed you to kind of seamlessly transition into entrepreneurship. And therefore, yes, you didn't really need a ton of seed money to get started. Can you tell me a little bit about that transition?
Exactly. Yes, I was teaching at a university part-time. So I was able to have the stability of having everything, including health benefits and a small income. And that allowed me to learn about taking small consulting projects on. So I would take on a small project, work with a client, develop something for them, and then that client would recommend me to another client, and it just grew from there. I travel to my clients to do the work that I do for them, so I didn't need an office, and I didn't need supplies, and I didn't need employees or anything like that in the beginning, so I really didn't need seed money, as you said. I just needed the time, and so I had the stability of a job where I had to be there a minimal amount of time, and then I was able to go out and build the consulting business in the free time that I had.
Yeah. And a lot of times when you're just starting out, you can do it as a solopreneur. And then, you know, some consulting firms end up being really, really big with lots of employees and everywhere in between. So tell me, how big is your team at this point?
Right. So we have a team of three. And I also have a lot of independent consultants who do their own work independently. And some of them also teach and who I bring in on projects from time to time when we need more people to work together. So for instance, I'm going to be working for Google in Buenos Aires in a couple of months, and then got another great opportunity for another job that same week. And so I brought in a couple of independent consultants who've worked for me before, and they're going to be a fantastic team doing an all-day retreat for a team of 100 executives. And so it's constantly shifting in terms of how many people are working with my company based on the needs that we have and what our clients are bringing to us.
It sounds like you have some great consultants that you really trust, but I would imagine in the beginning that was a little nerve-wracking to kind of hand over the keys and, and you really trust someone to do your process.
Yes.
So can you tell me about that, finding the right people and making sure they're implementing your process correctly?
Yes, absolutely. All of the people who work for me, if they're going to do training or executive coaching for my business, they have to have experience having already done it. So I know that the consultants who work for me now have already done a good deal of training. They have good reviews and testimonials from people who they've done training for, and they have executive coaching experience. And I also always have them shadow me first and co-facilitate or work together as a team with me so that I can observe before I ever send them out on my own. Mm-hmm. Before I ever send them out on their own.
Yeah. So what would you say is the biggest challenge being a consultant?
The biggest challenge is probably figuring out exactly what your clients need from you and providing it. When a company or an executive decides to bring on a consultant for a project, often that executive isn't sure what he or she needs or wants.
So they just know something's wrong.
Yes,
and
exactly.
They want you to fix it.
They know there's a problem. They want a solution. They don't always know exactly what the problem is or what's causing the problem. So the analysis that we have to do, it needs to be very thorough, and we need to bring our education and our background and our experience with similar projects to the table and make sure that we figure out what they really need, and then we provide them with the best solution for that. And that's challenging. Sometimes we learn after the fact that it wasn't really, that the situation wasn't what it appeared to be on the surface. But that doesn't happen as much now after all the years of 20 plus years of experience that I've had.
Sure.
But it definitely has been challenging in the past.
What would you say has been your biggest success?
For me, my biggest success is working for companies that I really admire and think have an innovative model, like Google, for example. I've been working for Google for 6 years. They're a major client for my company. And being on the inside and seeing what they put into their management strategies and their vision and the way that they encourage people to empower their teams and to communicate effectively has been incredibly inspiring to me. So my best success is really the level of clients that I get to work with and that I get to be proud to say I work with Google and I work with Mattel and I work with companies that really are teaching me so much about how to run my business more effectively, yet they're hiring me to help them. So
yeah, how cool.
Yeah.
What would you say is the number one thing you've learned from these businesses that you've implemented into your own?
Probably constant learning and growth. That you're never there. You never arrive. You could be the CEO. You need to read more, learn more, grow more, have mentors in your life, constant growth mindset.
It's so true. I think a lot of times as an outsider, you assume that, oh, this top CEO has just arrived. They know it all. But a lot of times there's this humble spirit of wanting to just learn more and more and more, because that's how you continue to move your business forward.
Exactly.
So obviously you've done a good job of differentiating yourself from the competition. There's a lot of consultants and there's a lot of need for consultants. So it works out. But with that said, what would you say you've done to make sure you do stand out from all the noise?
I think that I really customize what I do. I know a lot of companies have off the shelf types of programs, cookie cutter programs. We come in and we do a team building day, or we come in and we'll do leadership training. For me, I talk with the clients first. I really try to figure out what's going on for them, for their team. I look at their organization's vision and mission and strategic plan and what are the strategies. So I really, really customize what we do. All of our consultants really customize what we do. And I think that sets us apart. And I know that my clients appreciate that and they keep coming back because of that.
Okay. So this is just a fun question. If you weren't a consultant and CEO of your company, what would be your dream job aside from what you're doing?
I think it would be something similar to what you're doing right now.
Hosting,
I would love to interview celebrities. I'm that person who, even though I'm, you know, doing all this work in the consulting world, when I'm getting on the airplane, the first thing I grab is People magazine. I'm fascinated by people, celebrities, their stories, their lives, their relationships. So I would love to do celebrity interviews.
That is so fun. I love it. So were you able to achieve some of those goals that you set out from the beginning? What's kind of been the key to your success?
Never giving up. Constantly driving, striving, seeking help when I needed help, when I wasn't sure where to go, going to my mentors, and just never giving up. There were many moments where the work was incredibly difficult or there was no work and I wasn't sure where the next job was going to come from. And I never gave up and I kept trying. Just persistence and tenacity are essential.
Yeah. And you mentioned mentor. I know your husband is one of your greatest mentors.
Yes.
He's also a successful entrepreneur. So tell me a little bit about how that works, having your own husband as a mentor.
It's fantastic. He has a very successful claims adjusting business and he's grown it to have 17 employees who he manages beautifully and has wonderful relationships with. So whenever I struggle or I'm not sure about how to handle something, he's the first person I go to. He has the best advice. And whatever it is that I'm going through, he's been through it. I know because he's further along in his business development. So it works out wonderfully.
Oh, that's
I love
so
it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your business insight with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. We've got Michael Amini joining us. He's the chairman and CEO of Amini Innovation Corp. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show as well, and I want to hear about your company. Tell us what it is.
Well, we are a design, manufacturing, and distribution of all kind of home furnishing throughout the world.
Fantastic. And you got into this business. How? Was it something that you took over from, it sounds like, oh, my father owned the business and I took it over. Was this something that you just got into? I want to hear that story.
Well, 28 years ago, I'm actually, by trade, I'm an electrical engineer.
Wow.
When I graduated from school, I worked as an engineer for about a year. And very soon I found out, this is not for me. I can't sit in an office and, work on a project.
Yeah.
I wanted to, do something that challenges me more. And since my childhood, I loved to be in fashion business. As a matter of fact, when I was 6-7 years old, I was a child fashion model. And I think I got the inspiration of being in fashion business since then. Mm. I just wanted to get out and be in fashion business. And it was very difficult because I did try many things, including fashion business and imported shoes and been to car business a little bit. And finally, I
for
landed.
For pleasure or for the business?
Well, actually, I had to make a living. So I started working anywhere I could find a job after I quit electrical engineering. And I landed in a furniture company, a furniture manufacturing company right here in downtown Los Angeles. And I got a job as a furniture salesman.
Have you ever done anything in sales before that?
Car business.
Car and, business. Okay. So you were a standard car salesman taking that trade and selling furniture now?
I think I was born as a salesman. You know, I was always a sociable person and I could sell things.
It's a very good skill set to have.
It is. You have to be good in selling. I mean, everything we do every day, it's about selling. I think if you want to convince your child or your wife to go somewhere with you, you have to be a salesperson.
Yeah, no matter what it is.
Doesn't work without it.
Convince my coworkers where we should eat for lunch, whatever.
Absolutely. So I started working there not knowing the ABC of furniture, just to make a living. And very soon I found out that I liked this business and I wanted to design for them.
So not just sell the furniture, but start designing it?
Correct. Yeah.
You're tapping back into your fashion side?
I did. I actually came up with a bedroom set that they made. Surprisingly, they agreed to make it.
Wow.
And we did great business with it.
And you obviously got compensated for that.
Not really.
No.
I sold it. And I sold it. And, you know, the owner was very encouraged. And within 9 months, I started my own company.
You're like, I sold this thing and it's making this guy tons of money. That could have been your business.
It could have been for me.
Yeah.
But I always wanted to be a business owner. I wanted to, you know, take those challenges of being your own boss.
Yeah.
And from 28 years ago, here I am. I've gone through...
Jumping that far ahead. 28 years.
Yes.
What were some of those lessons, though, on your journey? I feel like there must have been a tipping point for you when you got started. Let's talk about that first and kind of go up from there. When you got started, what was that like? Going from, hey, I want to start my own business. This should be pretty easy if I sold this guy, you know, my idea and he made money with it. Was it as easy as you thought when you got started?
No, because I didn't have any money. I started my business with $7,000 that I saved up. And what I did in the beginning, I basically went selling their furniture. And at the same time, I bought all the return furniture that the store had or some of the manufacturing facilities that I knew. I went there and I bought their return furniture from consumers that they basically wanted to get rid of. And I brought them in and I started repairing them at night. And next day I go back and start selling that back to the retailers. And that's how I started basically making some money by selling those. So I repaired them, I sold them, I delivered them. And sometimes people ask, what are you? Are you a salesman or a delivery man? So I did basically from A to Z in the beginning. And I feel like I'm still doing it.
Yeah, still today? Just a lot more successful at it?
Well, you know, I mean, I never get scared of getting my hands dirty. Whatever it needs to be done, it needs to be done. Frankly, when I was hiring my first president for the company, which was about 15, 16 years ago, I never forget, he asked me, what is my job? Hmm. I said, you do whatever I do. He says, what do you do? I said, I manage the company and I clean the tables if I have to. And he accepted. So whatever it takes.
I love that. A man who does whatever it takes. Michael Amini is joining us. This is Business Rockstars, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I want to talk about something on your journey so far, and that's probably something that's helped you get to where you are, habits and rituals. Something that separates the billionaires that have sat in that chair, yourself that's sitting in this chair, and all the other successful celebrities and people that have sat here, from the people that are unhappy, sick, and broke, is habits and rituals. And so I'm curious, a habit and ritual of yours that you feel like has made you successful, what would you say it is?
I would say you have to be courageous, you have to be determined, and you have to be willing to work very, very hard and never give up.
Where did you learn that from?
Experience. Yes. I never had anyone telling me what to do.
You never grew up with any mentors?
No, because I left home when I was 17. Mm. And I went to school and I was all by myself, and pretty much everything that I've learned, it has been through trial and error. And I have learned one thing, that if you're determined to be successful and you never give up and you're willing to work hard, you will be successful.
That's so powerful. I love that, Michael.
I'm very passionate about what I do.
Very passionate.
Yeah. And, you know, I get asked from people, what do I do to be successful? I said, I wish I had a formula I could give you, but I can give you a few words. And those are my words.
Fantastic. And so would you say, because a big thing that we like to talk about here on the show is mentors and the power of having somebody who's done it already reach back and teach others who are trying to get there. Would you say that you could maybe be even further ahead in your level of success had you had mentors or advisors or coaches or consultants or anything like that?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you have mentors and someone to tell you what you're doing is wrong, you know, you definitely skip some of the mistakes that I have made, and and some of the self-made men and women that they're successful in what they do.
What has been the most effective thing for marketing? I feel like it's something we have to hone in on. It's the reason you've become successful amongst many other reasons, but it's the reason you consistently move product. And that's your ability to put it in front of people to be able to see it and ultimately result in sales. What's been most effective? Is it online? Is it magazines, as you were mentioning? But I also know you don't just sell to the consumer, you sell primarily business to business. So explain what that process looks like.
Well, all of it. I think social media has been very, very strong. So we have been in social media last 5 years, and we do have a marketing department that they're absolutely wonderful. And they do all the legwork, and we're out there through our social media, our website, and Facebook has been very, very strong for us. Twitter and every avenue that we can go through social media has been very strong. At the same time, you know, we have not forgotten about the traditional print, and we are in a lot of consumer magazine as well as trade magazines.
Was it a hard shift for you to make? I know that it's tough for some business owners who live by the six most deadly words. We've always done it this way.
Yes.
And so I know that it can be difficult to shift from, well, this is how we've been doing it for the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Now we have to start doing this social media and pixeling and remarketing and getting on all the social platforms and doing video content. Was that a tough shift for you to make, or was it something that was seamless?
It was a very tough shift, but I have two teenagers at home. One of them just actually left to overseas for a college. But watching them basically tells you what you have to do and what changes you have to make in your business. I mean, we go to buy shoes for them. They see the shoes there, but they don't want to buy it. They just want to buy it through social media, through a website. And it's amazing that how things has changed. But you start learning. And from 5 years ago, yes, it was a very difficult move for us. And we have done it, and we have done a great job, and we are out there, and we can be found very easily by consumers.
That's fantastic.
And that helps our retailers, because when they see that we are up and coming in every aspect of marketing, they appreciate that.
I'm sure they do. You guys are getting out there.
And talking about, you know, how do we market, you know, we of course have salespeople out there globally that they go see customers, and that also is another avenue for us to present the new goods to our customers that they don't get to come to the trade shows that we have here or other places in the world.
That's wonderful. Well, the one thing that's consistent amongst all successful people that sit where you're sitting is they adapt to change. And one thing that's definitely changed has been how you can market and how you can reach people. So I love that you brought that up. It was a tough change, but you did it, and it's going to help you be successful. Any last words for how people can reach out or find you or get your furniture?
Well, they can go to amini.com, and basically we have dealer locators there, and they can find
some local
closest
stuff nearby.
Exactly. And we are in almost 80 something countries, and they can find us the closest dealer near them, and
get some crystal furniture, get some bling.
We are obese.
That's That's fantastic. Well, Michael, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, and we connect a community of entrepreneurs. If you'd like to be a part of it, you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, or online at businessrockstars.com.
Are you an entrepreneur? I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. Some entrepreneurs will tell you working for somebody else just wasn't for them. So how can you tell if the entrepreneurial life is for you? Well, you might be an entrepreneur if you're really restless, you require constant challenges and a role that allows you to color outside the lines. You might be an entrepreneur if you're super creative. Creatives have that internal fire that burns and keeps them motivated and hungry for success. You might be an entrepreneur if you're insanely talented. Talented individuals love to run their own race, work with clients they love, and find new and exciting ways to raise their income level. If one or all of these traits describe you in any way, odds are you already know you may be an entrepreneur. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Hey, my friend's retail store was the victim of IoT password theft.
Yep. Cybercriminals are taking over security cameras, payment systems, and other IoT devices by exploiting vulnerabilities.
What if they target us and our dispersed network?
We're secured with Barracuda. We have advanced firewalls for our sites, enhanced security for our cloud infrastructure, and total email protection.
Such a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Hi, I'm Mike Ditka. On the field, they called me Iron Mike. But some days, even Iron Mike can feel a little rusty. So I turned to Blue Emu. Blue Emu's non-greasy, deep-penetrating formula gets down deep for big-time comfort. And more importantly, it doesn't leave me smelling like a locker room. Now, if you excuse me, I have some yelling to do. You hit like old men! Blue Emu. It works fast and you won't stink.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Jeff Olson. If bath time is a tough time at your house, you're not alone.
It is not uncommon for there to be a huge debate and discussion about who should bathe, how often, and with what and why.
Mayo Clinic dermatologist Dr. Dawn Davis is about to settle this sudsy debate. So kids, listen up.
For young infants and children between the ages of 6 to 12, it's best to wash or take a bath approximately 2 to 3 days a week.
Dr. Davis says once they hit puberty, teens should have a shower or bath every day, or at minimum every other day.
There are caveats to this. At any time in life when you develop excessive sweat or become very dirty, then you should bathe.
And here's something that may surprise kids and parents alike. You should bathe after swimming.
The truth of the matter is that natural and artificial water sources can still have a lot of germs.
So after you hit the beach or the pool, plan to hit the shower too. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit Mayo Clinic.
What are the legal do's and don'ts when starting a business? I'm Alex Worley, and here to help us answer that question, Len Gray. He's the founding attorney at Gray Legal. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And you learned a lot of these do's and don'ts through experience the hard way. So tell me your story first.
Yeah, I probably learned most of the don'ts that way.
Okay.
So I was an attorney at a large law firm in New York. Did that for several years. Pretty store crazy. You'll find that those large firms are not the best for the entrepreneurial type. And then I left to, at the time, actually start a beer brewery in my hometown of Memphis.
Cool.
Yeah, it was the thing I should have done and didn't do. All my friends are still mad at me about it. But after going from there to a couple of other startups, I ultimately started a SaaS platform with a good friend in the legal recruiting space. And we did that for about 5 years, and along the way did just about everything wrong that you could.
Okay. So let's go through some of them. What were the things that you did wrong?
The biggest thing we did wrong to put it simply is we spent way too much money on all the wrong things.
Like what?
The two biggest ones were legal and software development. I should start off by saying he is a lawyer too. And the last thing you want are two lawyers negotiating their own partnership agreement against one another. And so we ended up with this 50-page monstrosity of a partnership agreement that we brought in two other law firms to help us draft.
Wow.
It was pretty ridiculous.
And you were lawyers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. You know, you get into the weeds and, you know, frankly, I see it all the time now. It's, you know, it's one of the hardest parts of starting a business when you're doing it with somebody else is the, how do you value a speculative business piece of it? Right. I mean, in your mind, when you start, you know, when you start a startup, you're going to become Mark Zuckerberg. Right. I mean, that's why you do it. It can be a very thankless job. It's certainly in the beginning, you're not going to make any money doing it. And so you do it with the idea that at some point down the road, you're going to have all the money in the world. And how do you split up a business, which on day one is worth absolutely zero, and really probably has more debts than assets, you know? And then how do you get yourself in a good position for down the road?
And it's obviously a fine balance because on one hand, you need that legal protection. But on the other hand, like you said, you can go too far like you did and spend too much. So where's the balance?
That's a wonderful question.
Please teach us.
Yeah. There are sites out there, obviously, like LegalZoom, and there's a site, Clerky, that can be really great for the right set of founders. Founders who are sophisticated, if they've done it before, if they understand, kind of what they're doing on their own, then you can get a really wonderful product from those sites. I would never say anything bad about any of them. But then there's others who are just starting off that need probably a bit of guidance to make sure that they're adequately protecting themselves, but also to prevent them, you know, to stop them before they go too far and end up with the 50-page partnership agreement that covers things that will never in a million years become an issue.
And the next don't is to not kill your business before it starts, which sounds amazing, but what does it mean?
No, that's exactly right. It relates to what we were just talking about with that partnership agreement. You know, my partner in that startup was one of my very good friends. And by the end of the negotiation, we were about to murder one another. And you see this all the time, that people really, they lose perspective on what it is that they're trying to do. And they start to quibble over things that, again, just don't really matter in the long term. And you're never going to become Mark Zuckerberg if you can't get yourself off the ground.
Yeah. And there's a lot of gray area between your being your friend and your business partner. Right. I can't even imagine how hard that is to navigate and letting there be trust where there needs to be trust, but letting there be legal protection where that's needed too.
Yeah. It's funny, right? And there's no right answer. It just depends on every circumstance being a little bit different, that sometimes best friends can make great business partners, and sometimes best friends should never have anything to do with each other when it comes to business. But a lot of it is, I really believe, is just treating each other fairly and keeping your eye on the prize and don't consider yourself a billionaire before you're there. You'll be there one day.
Okay. So what's the big major do that we need to keep in mind?
The big major do, I think it relates to the two don'ts that we've talked about. It really is make sure that you're protected adequately. Take the time to get your foundation solid. If you're going to be a venture-backed startup, or if you want to be a venture-backed startup, doing the right things from a formation perspective so that when an investor comes in and does diligence, they know that you know what you're doing. And then beyond that, it's, you know, managing your spend and being really smart and not trying to over-lawyer something. And, you know, one of the things we see all the time, my brethren in the legal community, they can, you know, oftentimes when a client comes asking what they should, you know, or rather telling the attorney what they want, they'll just nod their head and keep, you know, turning the crank on the billable hour. So it's being vigilant and making sure that you're not getting talked into more than what you need. And again, it's a fine balance, but you can get there and you can get, you know, you can find good pricing now and you can get, you know, yourself, you know, as I said, have a great foundation, but not have it over lawyered so that you're tearing up your partnership agreement after 12 months and never referring to it again.
Great advice. Thank you so much to my guest, Len Gray, founding attorney at Gray Legal. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
I went straight into the first bubble in Silicon Valley in 1995 when I graduated college. triggered my interest in venture was this idea that I can work with a bunch of different entrepreneurs at a time and then have capital behind those ideas, and with a portfolio effect, see a bunch of them rise and fail, obviously, along the way. And the trials and tribulations of being an entrepreneur makes it a really fun kind of balance of my interests. I'm spending a lot of time on Instagram right now. Not a publisher, just a consumer. Funniest meeting was way back in the day. It was actually the Italian porn in a box vendor. That was all you could consume porn for, you know, $19.99 with one black box that you plugged in. I think for most of our investment decisions, it's the quality of the entrepreneur that we're backing. I'd say that's 80% of the battle, is just sort of seeing the fire in the eyes of the entrepreneur. Take more chances, travel more. Take longer to figure out your life, what you want to do with it. Raise as little capital as possible to hit the relevant milestones that prove your business will work. And be very capital efficient in how you think about capitalizing the company and hitting the milestones.